PAs, allies, and anybody that wants to learn more about the LGBT plus community. My name is Zanardi, and I'm so glad all your beautiful faces are here. Hello, everybody. So, our guest today is, her name's Shanna, but you might know her as Birdtails over on TikTok. They are obsessed with birds. They have many, many pet birds. I think 11 is what they said. The first half of this conversation is just about birds and my genuine curiosity, because I was interested in what they do and what birds, having pet birds, is like. And so the first half of this conversation is all about Shanna and all about her birds and I guess bird adoption culture and really understanding that. And then the second half, we talk a little bit more about Shanna's personal experience. They do identify as gender fluid, I believe. They're acceptable with any type of pronoun, but so we talk about what is gender fluid, what does it mean, what does it feel like to be gender fluid, and we talk more about their personal experience. But overall, this is a great episode. I just enjoy talking to Shanna. I think she is a wonderful person and definitely cares a lot about people, clearly her birds, and so I think there's a lot of value in entertainment that you can get from this conversation. So thank you all for listening, and without further ado, here is Shanna. Shanna, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So why don't you just introduce yourself to the audience? Just tell us who you are.
Hi, I'm Shanna. This is Tango. She'll be here for the rest of the time. She's my ESA, so when I do get a little nervous, it's nice to have her around. My name is also Birdtails, as a lot of people probably know me as, on TikTok and Instagram. I grew up in a foster home, and now I'm just basically existing. I made my channel about a year ago, and 2 years ago actually, and it's just been thriving, and it's been wonderful to see the support for people that love birds as much as I do.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's very fun and cute to watch. You made it 2 years ago. Was that when it was still Musical.ly, or was it TikTok at the time?
It had just turned into TikTok. I was actually invited to TikTok from someone that was actually searching for people to bring to TikTok. So they needed more pet accounts, and I thought it was a scam at first. Yeah. And they asked me if I wanted to join the creators program, and I said, you know what the heck, sure. And here we are now, it's 2 years later.
Nice. Yeah. So you've been with it since the beginning. That's pretty cool. Do you have like any insider knowledge of how things worked, or like
at first, yes, but as of now, it basically, we used to have what was called handlers, and basically it was a person, a liaison between TikTok and the creators. They did away with that about 7 months ago, and I have not heard from my handler or TikTok ever since. So okay. I honestly have no idea what they even think of me anymore, because I haven't had any contact with them, unfortunately. Sure. But it's a great platform, honestly. I really enjoy it. So regardless of the fact that they're not responding to emails, I still like the platform. I find it a great way to spread information.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's definitely a fun platform. It's unique with just the way, like the music and just the way things are done. You know, it's very different than say like Vine or Instagram. And the creative control that you have inside the app is very cool. The editing features and the different filters and things like that. So it's definitely a fun platform. I know that it has come under fire recently, especially with more marginalized groups. I know the other day they did the blackout. Black creators, you know, where they felt marginalized and they felt like they were being suppressed. I know LGBT creators have experienced some things. But it's interesting because I know one of the main executives of creators, his name is Kudzi. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but he's gay and black, or LGBT and black, which is weird. I don't know if he's like gay or bi or what he identifies as, but I know he is LGBT, which is weird because it's like he is one of the big shots, yet so many people are feeling discriminated against or suppressed.
Definitely.
It's just weird. I posted a video the other day, and literally yesterday, and it was on Alan Turing, who Are you familiar with Alan Turing, the mathematician, and he cracked the Nazi code in World War II?
I'm not familiar, but please elaborate.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So he was a mathematician, and basically he's regarded as the founder of modern computer science. Mm-hmm. So just the deep algorithms and the understanding of how computers work. And in World War II, the Nazis had this like secret way of sending messages, this code that no one understood. And they were sending battle plans, and Hitler was sending orders that way. And Alan Turing and his team actually like cracked it. Like they decoded it.
I remember this from history. Yeah.
from history. And it's a great movie, in The Imitation Game, with Benedict Cumberbatch. But anyway, so he cracked the code, and they were able to read what the Nazis were doing and interpret their messages, mm-hmm. which turned the tides of the war at that time. And he was gay. He was openly gay. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so I made a video on it, just about on Alan Turing, just educating people on what he did. And they muted the sound.
Oh.
Like, they just, so the video's still up. Yeah. But the sound, and you just see me in the green screen, and there's no talking, but just the green screen of like Alan Turing or whatever is in the background. And I'm just baffled because I didn't cuss in it. I didn't say anything like sexual. And it's like, why is this being suppressed? Like, why? And they didn't give me a reason. I couldn't even appeal it. And I was just very angry. I was like, okay, I am understanding why people are getting upset at TikTok.
Yeah, like, I personally, I've had a few of my videos, and I am a family-friendly person. Like,
yeah.
I don't post controversial content, well, that I think is controversial anyways. Mm-hmm. But a couple of my videos have actually been taken down completely, and I've emailed TikTok about it, and they just said, went against community guidelines. I'm like, okay, can you specify which community guidelines this is going against? And nothing. Just
right.
Radio silence. And I'm like, okay, well, obviously there's some bias going on with some of the content that's being reviewed. Obviously there's someone up there reviewing it, because sometimes my videos are reviewed immediately and put back up, and then sometimes they are left for literally a week. Mm-hmm. And I just delete it and repost it, and sometimes it's okay. So obviously there's someone there doing something.
It seems to, like, it just seems to be like the luck of the draw of who is reviewing each video. Mm-hmm. Like, you might get someone who is more of a hard ass, and you might get someone who's more lenient. It's just, it's weird.
100%. I 100% think there's a lot of stuff on TikTok, honestly, that I won't get into, that I'm just very irritated about. But I think that there's a lot that they could do if they actually listened to the creators, especially the people that were formerly that basically made this app what it is mm-hmm. today. The people that were originally founding TikTok, the people that were brought in to be popular creators, we were listened to in the beginning. That's why TikTok was so great at the beginning. There was little moderation, but nobody was getting their videos taken down or anything. And since the creators have started to be ignored, and I feel really ignored, I've given up reaching out to them, but I feel like a lot of problems could be solved if they would listen to the people themselves and not work as necessarily a major corporation, which is exactly what they are. They're basically trying to please the most amount of people, and they don't care whether they step on certain creators. And I don't want to get in trouble for saying that, but literally that's how I feel. And I don't speak for everyone, but I speak for myself when I say that I'm a little disappointed in this app. Still love it, but just a little disappointed.
Totally. It's a little bit of a love-hate relationship at some times.
Definitely.
And it's totally the money thing. Like, everything is just driven by money. It's the same reason why, like, Disney won't put, like, a main queer mm-hmm. character, because then they have to pull from their China box office or Russia. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's all money driven, and it's upsetting because they don't put people first. They don't put the creator first.
No.
And it's just profit driven. So tell me about your birds. Like, how did you get into this? Like it's such a cool but like kind of random like hobby or thing to do. So when did this interest in birds really start?
So I grew up with quite a few homes. I was most foster kids in general, and I know some of the people that are watching this are probably in the system, and they know you bounce from home to home to home. So I have a lot of experiences with a lot of different types of families. I was never allowed to have a pet as a kid. However, I did at one point grow up on a Native American reservation where I met an awesome falconer, and I learned a lot about free flight from him. I never recommend that you go through trying to fly your birds outside without some sort of guidance from someone who's like a professional or someone who has experience in it. But that's how I learned. Now, I wasn't in that home for very long. I probably about a year or so before I was bounced to another home. And my love for birds really started there, but it never really blossomed until I actually rescued a crow from a river that was really, really fast. I saw a baby crow. Well, I didn't see it, but I heard the baby crow fall into the water and I heard it screaming. And I was around 6 or 7. I jumped into a full-fledged river that was like, literally, I could swim, but it was definitely hard to get out. And I rescued the baby bird and I brought it back to its nest. And I just, after that, I'd bring food for the crow family because the crows were all screaming at me because I was touching their baby, even though I was literally saving its life because they didn't care. Yeah. And I actually would bring food to them and eventually built up a trust with a group of wild crows, which they're extremely intelligent. And they actually saved me from a bully. I was walking through the forest one day and all of a sudden I hear like an alarm call from a crow and I look back and I see someone that had been bullying me before and I started running and all the crows, I shit you not, I don't know if I'm allowed to swear, but
yeah, you can,
started swooping down at this bully while I was running out of the forest. And I just thought that was the most amazing thing. I'm like, wow, these creatures actually understand. They understand that I'm in trouble and I'm part of their family because I didn't have that. I didn't have a family really. And so wow. For these crows to basically just take me and be like, hey, yeah, you're okay. That was a big thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's incredible. I never knew that birds thought like that, or they could do that.
Crows are extremely intelligent, and they will actually, if you are mean to them, they'll teach their children that you are mean to them, and their children will hate you too.
Oh my gosh,
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because for me, the crows, like my worldview of crows is they're the annoying loud birds that like squawk at 6 a.m.
Yes, and eat your
trash.
They're definitely that, but they're a lot smarter than people give them credit for. They're actually being trained in some places to pick up garbage, and they drop the garbage in the garbage can, and then the machine rewards them with a treat. So you have free labor, basically.
Oh my god! And is this like governments doing it, or like cities that?
Cities. I forget exactly which city put this into place, but it's working really well with the ravens and the other corvids. And I think that's so cool that basically you can give I guess it takes away jobs from people, but
yeah.
It also helps the economy, as not the economy, the environment as well, which is
right.
Another thing that I'm super, super, what's the word I'm looking for? I really care about the environment. So
passionate.
I try my best to stay. That's the word. Very passionate.
Yeah. So, and sorry, I really just got distracted because something popped up on my screen and I don't know how to delete it.
I have ADHD. I understand. Place.
I was gonna say the birds. So like, are crows deadly? Like, or do they attack? Like, can they harm people?
Because
I've always thought that.
100%. Okay. They could take out your eye. They could scalp part of your. if they. Really
I remember, like Pirates of the Caribbean, the second one or whatever, the one that opens on the. There's one of the Pirates of the Caribbean where like the movie begins with the guy like getting eaten alive by a crow, and I'll never forget that, like watching that as a child, and I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, they can be savage, especially when their babies are involved. They will come after you, but they're also one of the most intelligent birds, and they can actually learn to speak better than some parrots can, which is really cool.
Like speak, like, as in just like
full-on speak, like say hello. There's one that's trained to say to nevermore.
Oh my God.
I think that's the coolest thing, and it's clearer than a macaw's speech, like one of those rainbow birds that you see. It's even clearer than that, and I think that's insane.
Whoa! How many birds talk? Like, all I knew was parrots. Like, how many other species?
So certain species can talk. There's not a lot of parrots that are extremely good talkers. Cockatoos are at the top, along with like macaws and Amazons. The three species are extremely good talkers. She can talk. But her talking is more of like a garbled speech that you can barely understand. And it's basically like a parent of a two-year-old, like a two-year-old babbling and being like, oh yeah, he wants juice. Like, I can understand what she wants, but like, you probably don't have any idea that I was actually trying to say something.
Oh my gosh, that is so cool. Okay, do you know, like, do you know the science or the history of how they talk? Like, do you know, like, why birds talk or how they...
So they're not actually talking. What they're doing is they're actually mimicking your speech. So they may not understand what hello means. They may not understand that what they're saying is, I want to go outside, meaning that I actually want to go outside. However, if you basically combine that vocalization with an action enough times, it basically just becomes second nature to them. They understand that, oh, if I say watermelon, or if I say apple, someone's going to give me an apple because I understand that that's what it means. Mm-hmm. But in the wild, birds will mimic basically anything. There's a bird called, I believe it's the mockingbirds in general. They will mimic things. They won't understand what they mean. They just think they're a cool sound and they'll mimic it.
Yeah.
So they're just basically squeezing their vocal cords just like us, and their tongue is just moving and they make sounds, but they definitely can't articulate the way that you and I can. Mm. They can. Probably the best speaker would be an African gray. And though I didn't include that in my birds that could talk really well, they are the best talkers is African grays.
African gray. Okay. Yeah. But they don't understand language like we do. Like it's more like, like a dog. Like a dog might know the word walk and associate with that, with like a walk.
Yes,
but
exactly.
They can't, like, they don't understand the, like, the communication aspect of it, or like
No, they don't. But they do to an extent understand what certain things mean. But definitely if you had a full on conversation, even if a bird could talk like 1,000 words, it's not going to know what any of the words mean. Right. It just knows that you're talking to it, and they're like, "Oh, cool, this is nice."
Yeah, you're not gonna have a conversation about your day.
No, exactly.
So you had this experience in the woods when you were 6 or 7 with the crows, and then so like, when did you get your first bird, or like, when did it start becoming, you know, like an adoption thing?
My first bird was a budgie that I adopted, also known as like a parakeet. And I was in police college during that time. So I snuck it into my dorm. And then my roommates, who, if they ever see this, I don't like you. they ratted me out. They ratted me out.
Oh my God.
And the people were like, you have 2 weeks to get rid of it. I'm like, well, fuck that, I ain't getting rid of it. So I moved out of the dorm and moved into my grandparents, who didn't like the bird either. But I'm like, listen, this bird isn't going anywhere unless it's to someone that I really trust. So fast forward that, and my aunt, who I'm living with now, actually took the bird in because I thought I was going to move back home to Thunder Bay, Ontario, which is where mostly I grew up. But they took him and he did really well, but he was an adopted bird, so he was older, so unfortunately did pass away. But that was my first bird. The very first larger bird that I got was a conure named Yoshi, and I still have her today. She's helped me with so many rehabilitations just because she's so relaxed and she doesn't attack other birds, and other birds just feel safe with her. So I'm like, this is great, you're a great bird and I love you.
How many birds total do you have right now?
Currently I have 11, 10 of which, well, one of which is adoptable after quarantine. Unfortunately, I don't want people, we have 2 people that are immune compromised in our house, like severely. So no one can come into the house, and everyone needs to wash really well when they come into the house in general.
And so these birds are like, are they therapy birds, or like they're therapeutic? And you mentioned how it was so calming and they help you. Or is that like a, I know like obviously like there's therapy dogs, but are there therapy birds?
So Tango is an ESA. She has a doctor's note. She's not a service animal. A lot of people get confused between service animals, therapy animals, and ESA animals. They're 3 totally different things. The only animals that can be service animals are in the United States, horses, miniature horses, and dogs. In Canada, we can have cats, dogs and miniature horses as service animals, but that's it. So Tango, I'll grab her. She's holding a bottle cap because that's her favorite toy. She is my ESA, so she has a prescription from a doctor basically saying that her presence makes me feel a lot better. Birds can be extremely therapeutic because they are flock animals. They are extremely attuned to basically your feelings. She can tell I'm upset before I'm even upset. So she'll come over. She's actually trained to stop certain behaviors. So if I start like continuously scratching, she'll climb up and she'll put her head there so that I'm not doing it. So she's very smart, and birds are extremely intelligent, but not every bird is therapeutic. Some like you probably heard earlier, I don't know how good this microphone is, but the cockatoo in the background was screeching. So he's 53. He does his own thing, but
he's 53.
He's 53. He's gonna live to be about 80.
Is that like a bird years or human years?
No, human years. He's 53.
Oh my gosh.
He's double the age of what I am.
Wow, I didn't know they lived that long.
Certain ones do. Like macaws can live up to like 100 years old. Those are the basic parrots that you see in like pirate films, the big rainbow colored ones. They can live to be about 100 years old if you take really good care of them.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I'm going to be 63 when she dies if she lives to her natural lifespan.
60. So what is like the average of like, I guess birds, domesticated birds or birds that you have in your house? What is the average lifespan of a bird?
It really depends on the bird. Like budgies usually don't live past 15. Conyers like Tango, the really colorful ones, the one that I just showed you, she'll live to be about 40. Green cheeks usually around 30. And then the larger parrots are usually going to live to be at least 40 to 80 years old, at least. Wow. So it's like a lifelong commitment, and you can't get one on a whim because you're gonna have a bad time because they bite. And I have scars on my hands because I've worked with aggressive birds that basically if I didn't take them, they would have been put down. So so that's why I take them, because I have nerve damage, so I can't feel the bites. So it's okay.
Wow. And so I literally never knew this about birds. I thought they were just like 7 years old or 10 years old. So what about like crows or seagulls, like everyday birds?
Those guys, I believe seagulls can live up to 20 years. If they're taken care of really well, like if they are living on a beach somewhere where they have food, like seagulls only prey on garbage because it's convenient and it's existing. But if you go places like the coasts and stuff, you see them and they actually fish, they hunt for food and stuff like that. Crows, I'm not too sure exactly. I think maybe 30, maybe.
Oh, wow.
In captivity though. In the wild, usually birds don't live as long.
Okay.
Like, she's an endangered species. A sun conure in general in the wild is endangered. Like you can't find them. But in captivity, they're thriving. So usually their lifespan's around 40 to 50 years.
Okay.
Usually.
Why are some of these birds endangered? Is it just like deforestation and loss of habitat? Is that the main reason, or is there other reasons why?
There's a lot of reasons. Part of it is actually the pet trade in general. Sam, the cockatoo that keeps annoyingly screaming upstairs, who I love very much, but annoys the crap out of me. He, I believe, was a wild caught bird. He isn't banded, so he doesn't have a band around his leg telling us exactly where he came from. He fits the age criteria of basically when it was legal to capture wild birds and stuff, but it still happens to this day. Basically, they'll cut the top off of those little Coke bottles, shove the bird in there, seal it, put a little hole, and ship them in groups of 100, just laying them on top of each other. 98% of them pass away before they even get to the destination that they're going. Another thing is deforestation. That's basically what happened to these guys. And apparently these guys are really dumb in the wild, and people will set seed down and entire flocks will come down and they'll just net the entire thing, which is really sad, but but I mean, it's something that happens, especially in Brazil. Brazil is huge for parrot trafficking.
That's unfortunate that they're, you know, dying out like that, especially these beautiful birds that are very colorful and pretty. So what So are you fostering birds or are you like the owner of most of these?
So I have what's called permanent residents and then I have adoptable birds. So the permanent residents are originally adoptable birds that I take in that I realize either have too much issues that people aren't going to be able to deal with them or they bond too heavily with me, as is the case of this thing. but I do only take in about 1 to 2 parrots at a time because I like to focus solely on them. Not only that, I don't receive government funding. Everything that I get for these birds, all the medical treatment, which a vet visit for one bird alone costs around $230 just for a basic checkup. And so I basically dish that out myself with the help of Patreon and stuff like that, but I still provide a service for the funds that are coming in. And basically, I don't know what's happening up there, but they're freaking out.
I can barely hear it, so it's good.
Okay, perfect, because it's really loud on my end, so as long as it's not loud on yours. But I only take 1 to 2 at a time to rehabilitate because I don't want to become a hoarder, because that happens to a lot of parrot rescues because people just drop off birds. But yeah, just 1 to 2 at a time. I rehabilitate them. I rehome them. My interview process is extremely, apparently, very hard to get through, according to people that, because they have to have a first interview, which is an online interview like we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. And then the second interview is somewhere where I can meet them, where they don't know where I live, because I've had people come to my house after. Mm-hmm. After I've denied them a bird, and it's just not a great idea. And then the third time, we actually bring them in to the house to meet the birds, and they just basically hang out with them. I give them a couple days to make their decision. If they're not interested, then they're not interested. If they are, then we fill out a contract that states that you can't clip their wings, because that's super big with me. I don't believe in wing clipping. It's very, very common in the USA and Canada, but in Europe and like places like Germany and Austria, it's actually illegal to clip their wings, which I like a lot. So I do rehabilitate them a lot. And then once they're ready, they go home. But I do have 10 currently that are permanent residents that have issues, either medical or behavioral, that I don't think people can handle. But yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long, boring process.
I'm sure, but it's worth it if they get to a happy home.
100%. Yeah.
What is wing clipping? I mean, I can kind of put 2 and 2 together, but like what does that mean for the bird? What does it do to the bird?
So basically, it is trimming the, here, let's see if Tangle let me. So it is basically just trimming the first primary feathers on a bird's wing like this. A proper clip. I don't believe in any type of clipping, but what they call a show clip is when you clip the first 3 to 4 primaries. It prevents a bird from basically getting a lot of speed and flying freely. However, it can cause them to crash if they aren't used to it, and it can actually bruise and like break their keel bone, which is the bone that's right here. But there's another type of clipping, which I honestly think people that do these clips should not have birds at all. Basically, they take all of the feathers off. They'll clip all of them, so they have no flight capability whatsoever, which basically just makes them an ornament, and I don't like that. I think that birds in general should fly, and I try to educate people on why it can be harmful. It can affect their muscle mass. It affects their basically their well-being in general, because it's basically like me putting you in a wheelchair. I'm just like, basically you have the use of your legs, but you're not allowed to use them. This is more convenient for me as a person, because I don't have to chase you around the house, or I don't get poop everywhere. But that's just part of owning a bird. Like, you just have to chase them around. You got to clean up poop. She's potty trained. It's possible to potty train them. So I mean,
right.
Yeah,
that just sounds terrible. Not letting a bird fly or have that ability is like you said, it's literally like taking the legs off of a human.
It's very sad. It is. They still have transportation. They can still use the wheelchair, but they're not allowed to run. They're not allowed to do anything. And I think that's sad.
Yeah. And what's natural to them. I mean, birds are made to fly. So
exactly.
How is the maintenance of birds? Like, is it a lot of work for anyone interested in getting a bird? Kind of just describe what that looks like.
Well, There are like two types of owners. There are the type of owners that will get a pet and basically give it the basic necessities and will let it do its own thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to take good care of your bird, you're going to be preparing meals for them. It takes me 6 hours to make chop that lasts them 2 months, which is basically I cut up all fruits and veggies all by hand. I'll cook certain lentils and beans and I'll throw it in there. And that's what they get for breakfast. So they're mostly raw food diet. Their cages in general, I have 5 cages, 5 large cages. And that takes me around 4 hours to clean every week. And then I deep clean them every second week. I deep clean them every second week, and that takes me even longer. So I have a lot of birds. For the average person that maybe has one or two, it's still going to take you a little while. And if you're giving them fresh fruits and veggies like you should be doing, because they need that, then it's going to take you even longer. But if you just get a bird and you make it an ornament and you throw it in your living room and just put seed in there, and then it's like no effort at all, but it's definitely not healthy for them.
Sure. So your birds eat fresh fruits and vegetables or beans. What is that the diet of most birds? Like birds in the wild, do they eat berries and things like that?
The good thing also, a lot of people you assume they eat seed, but the thing is, in the wild, birds are flying hundreds of miles every week. They're burning off of that fat that they have from the seed. But in captivity, birds are pretty stagnant. My birds aren't. They fly a lot. But most birds don't go outside to fly around for an hour a day. They don't get that exercise. So that fat from that seed is just sitting in their liver and causing issues like fatty liver disease. It's causing like muscle issues and stuff like that. But if you feed them a proper diet for captivity, which is things that are higher in nutrients, lower in fat, then they're going to do a lot better. They're going to live a lot longer. Yeah.
Have you ever had a bird like fly away?
That's a very common question. And honestly, no, because she has 4,000 hours of training. Well, more than that now, because last time I checked, it was 4,000, which was about 5 months ago. So she has more now. So I don't let them out unrestrained without a harness or in a cage until I am absolutely positive that they're going to fly, but they're not going to spook or fly off. Mm-hmm. The main problem with people that take their birds outside is their birds don't know what hawks are. They don't know what falcons are. They don't know what cars are. They don't understand. So when something makes like a really loud noise or something appears out of nowhere, their instinct's going to tell them, I need to leave. I need to take off. And they're not going to wait for you. They're going to go.
Yeah.
So Tango is trained. She knows what hawks are. She knows what all these things are. She's been desensitized to all of these things. So she's less likely to spook and fly off. In fact, she seeks me out if she feels in danger, which is what I've trained her to do. But the average bird isn't trained to do that. So if the average person takes their bird outside and it spooks, it's probably going to leave. You're not going to find it.
Yeah.
It's not because they want to leave you. It's because they're scared and they don't know like how to get back to you or what to do.
Right. And that's probably not like, that's probably doesn't end well for them if you have a domesticated bird that's out in the wild now.
Definitely not. Tango knows how to forage. I've taught her how to forage for emergency purposes. In case we get separated, I don't see it ever happening, but if it did, I'd like her to be able to find food and water so that she can survive until I find her. But the average bird in captivity, they have instincts, yes, but they will be lost. Once they're in a tree and they have no idea how to fly down because it's like three stories high, they're like, okay, well, I guess I'll just sit here till my human comes to get me. And unfortunately, if your bird is a quiet bird like Tango, you're not going to find them because they're not going to be able to flock call you. So that's the issue. That's the main issue. I've never had a bird fly away, but it's definitely possible if you don't know what you're doing. So anybody watching, I recommend not free flying your birds unless you have a mentor or someone. And I always stress that because I'm like, I don't want to be responsible for you losing your bird. Kind of thing.
And how do you teach your bird to forage? What does that like look like?
So basically, what I did is I would grab a lot of natural seed-bearing trees that live in my area, or fruit trees, like we have a lot of mulberry in Windsor. So I would grab those and I would basically cover them in leaves and I'd make it look as natural as possible. And basically just show her, hey, there's food here. You can get food from trees. You can get food from the ground. There's food all around you. You just got to find it. Unfortunately, Tango probably doesn't recognize a lot of the stuff outside as toxic, which is something against her, which I physically can't teach. I don't know how to do that, but I'm just hoping that she has enough common sense to know not to eat certain things.
Yeah. Right.
But I only fly her in places where I know every single tree in the vicinity isn't toxic. So my neighborhood, we have no trees that are toxic to her. So I feel at ease letting her kind of do her own thing.
Okay. So yeah. Do you know how, so like in World War II, or in like, not even World War II, in most past wars, they had like doves that send message, or carrier pigeons that send messages. Mm-hmm. How does one train that? I can kind of understand how you could like get it to, you know, attach a message to itself, but how do you tell it to like go from point A to point B? How does that work? But first, I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to tell you how you can make your hygiene go from good to great. If you're a girl, you can maybe just skip ahead a few seconds, but if you're a guy or a cis guy with balls, I want to tell you about Manscaped. Manscaped is the number one and only men's grooming brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming. That's right. If you're shaving your balls, if you're shaving your no-no square, then go ahead and check out Manscaped over at manscaped.com. I've been using this for over a month now. I haven't had any accidents. I used to nick myself, cut myself all the time trying to shave down there and get ready. But you know what? That doesn't happen anymore. Manscaped offers the best shave that a man could have, I guess men could shave together. That'd be kind of weird though, right? That a man could have. If you are a man and you have balls and you shave those balls, which in my opinion, you should, Manscaped's newest trimmer, the Lawnmower 3.0. It's a third generation trimmer. It's cordless, it is waterproof, and it's so easy. It makes shaving so easy. You can take it in the shower, get those hard to reach spots. Do yourself and your balls a favor. Check out manscaped.com. Use code GAYFAM20 for 20% off and free shipping. That's right, code GAYFAM20, 20% off and free shipping. If you've been listening to this podcast a while, you know now that Manscaped is the only way that you should be shaving your balls. So if you're a man and you have balls, go on over to manscaped.com, use code GAYFAM20. All right, now back to the show. But how do you tell it to like go from point A to point B? How does that work?
So the cool thing, the sad thing and the cool thing about messenger pigeons, first off, they're real messenger pigeons are actually a species that became extinct due to people culling them off after the war, which is very sad. But basically how they know where to go is they actually have a coop set up where the other base is, and they take the pigeons from that coop and they bring it with them. And then when they need to release messages, they'll just release the bird and the bird naturally, we don't know exactly how they do it, but they can actually geolocate how to get back from that specific location. No matter how far away they are, they can find their way back using electromagnetic fields, which I think is super cool. But pigeons especially have this ability. So they just basically take the pigeon from one coop, bring it with them. When they want to send a message, they send them off and they go, basically the pigeons go find their home.
So it's a similar, so they take that same coop that they were in and like they send it to the other, to where they need to go?
Yeah, so basically, say this is my pigeon, okay? So I'm taking the pigeon out of the coop before I go on my adventure, okay? So now I'm going on my adventure. I'm like several hundred miles away and I'm like, oh crap, I need to send a message to someone. I attach this letter to the pigeon and I say, be free. And they'll basically be like, okay, I gotta go home. I don't know what to do here. So they just basically, they go home. They find their way home and that's how they do it. And then vice versa, like if the other people wanted to send a message, it would just be the same thing, except a different home base for the pigeons to find.
Okay, I get it. So yeah, it's okay. That makes more sense now. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. So how did you, okay, I know that we've been kind of connected for a while. We're on our TikToks. We've kind of followed each other for a while now. How did you find Alphabet Mafia? Did it just pop up one day? Or
it just popped up on the For You page, and I'm like, what is this? Then I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty cool. So there's not a lot of people that are, their page is specifically made to support a certain thing. Like, mm-hmm. my page is birds, but your page is to support all the LGBTQ community, and I think that that's wonderful. I've always been someone that would basically support everyone. If you're a furry, I support you. If you are an LGBTQ person, I support you. If you are a man, I support you. If you're a woman, yeah. I don't care who you are. But as soon as you start disrespecting me, then I'm like, okay, bye.
Yeah, kind of right.
thing. But I don't care. Like, I'm probably the weirdest person that I know. So if everybody's weird, basically normalcy is just it doesn't exist. No right. one's normal. We're all just basically trying to bow down to society's expectations. And I try to go against that because I don't believe in it, you know?
Yeah.
I think that we should all just be weird, be okay to be weird. It's fine. Everyone's weird.
I love that. Normalcy doesn't exist. And if it did exist, it's overrated.
Exactly. No one who wants to be normal. That's like right. so boring.
So boring. Like, yeah. Like, look, you have birds. Like, that's why we're talking, because you did something that most people don't do. Like, I love that. Yeah. And you have a huge following on TikTok because you have birds.
Yeah. And I support you because you're amazing. And I really love what you do. So that's why I usually don't agree to be on podcasts, because like my anxiety sometimes gets like really bad. But honestly, talking with you isn't really an issue.
Oh, you thank seem you.
So yeah, no problem. You're a good interviewer. So.
Oh, I appreciate that. And you're a great guest.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry about all the issues. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about, but like,
oh, basically you're fine. You're
jumping through. First, I couldn't do it, and then you couldn't do it, and then I didn't feel as bad. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it had to cancel out. We had to.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, now it's all good now.
So I remember we exchanged emails a while back, and I mm-hmm. think you mentioned that you have a sister, or was it your cousin who is trans?
I do. My cousin is.
Okay, so the daughter Sandra. Or the person of. The person that is from your aunt, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But and what's their name?
Andra. She's very, Andra. Very sweet. She's actually, I think she's sleeping next door right now. But yeah, she's an awesome person. And I have quite a few friends that are also trans as well. Before I even knew, like, that any of them were, I'm just like, oh, okay. Yeah. I was actually the very first person that my best friend told that she was gay before anyone, before even, like, her family. She's just like, hey, Shanna. I'm like, yeah, what's up? She's like, I don't know how to tell you this, but like, and I'm like, and I looked at her, I'm like, you're gay. And she's like, yeah, I'm like, girl. I'm like, I know.
And you're, yeah. And you're straight, right?
I am actually not. My sexuality is very complicated. I am gender fluid. So it depends on how my masculinity goes, I guess, whether I'm liking girls or liking guys. Mm-hmm. So I guess bi, I don't know, but it's just
fluid in general.
it's very fluid, and I'm very outspoken about it. Like, mm-hmm. I don't care if people know. I was very fortunate to not only be in a foster home where they were very accepting, mm-hmm. but also the place where I'm at right now. My aunt is absolutely wonderful, and she is very supportive. And honestly, I don't think that I would have gotten through this quarantine without them, because like, I am extremely depressed all the Aww. Time, because like, I want, see, it's when you say that you can't do something that you want to do it. So mm-hmm. I want to go to stores now because I'm not allowed. That's just like how defiant I am. I'm like, I want to go, and I'm like,
yeah,
but that'll hurt people, so I don't.
But yeah,
I'm still really sad that I can't, kind of thing. But yes,
totally. Well, if you don't mind, so I would like to talk more about being gender fluid.
Sure.
And what that means, because I've never had someone that's actually, you know, admittedly gender fluid on this podcast, but I know a lot of the audience might identify with that, or a lot of people that like what we do here would want to do that. So what, in your definition, what does it mean to be gender fluid? Like what does that look like from your perspective? or feel so like,
some,
I guess.
So some days I wake up and I look at my hair and I'm like, oh my gosh, like that's horrible. Like I don't like it. I want my hair short. So there's a lot of dysmorphia when it comes to being gender fluid in my case. I know that a lot of people don't have it, but when I wake up some days and I look at myself and I'm like, that doesn't belong. But then like 7 hours later, I'm like, damn, I'm looking hot. Kind of thing. But that's the best way I can explain it. It's just some days I wake up and I'm like, I shouldn't be this. I shouldn't have boobs. I shouldn't have it. And then it's very confusing. And I envy trans people a little bit because they know, and I don't. Sometimes it's, oh, I'm very feminine. I'm a girl. And then sometimes it's like, I shouldn't be a girl kind of thing. And it's very confusing.
Right.
But it's definitely something that I've had to work through because I didn't understand. At first I thought maybe I was just bi, or then I thought I was lesbian. And well, my friends still think I think that I'm lesbian, but
it goes beyond attraction, right? It's not, so it's an internal feeling of just yourself and who you are.
100%. Yeah. And it's very it's a very complicated thing to talk about because I don't really know how to articulate it into words. I'd like to explain it perfectly so that people out there are like, damn, that's me. But it's just so different depending on the person that you can't really give them a specific thing that makes them say, oh, that's me, because I change so often.
And do you use they, them pronouns?
I'm a people pleaser in general. So I will respond to any pronoun. I don't really have a pronoun that I prefer. If someone calls me they, them, I'm like, cool. If someone calls me she, her, I'm like, cool. If someone calls me he, him, I'm like, hey, cool. I'm very, nothing really offends me. If you've offended me in some way, then you've done something real bad. But yeah, I personally, myself, as a gender fluid person, do not have specific pronouns that I prefer because I sometimes, like literally, I could go from right now looking at myself like, hey, I look pretty hot as a girl. And then a couple of minutes later, I'm like, you know what? That's not right.
Right. And then you have to expect
people. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone's like, wait, but 2 minutes ago you were there. And it's like always changing. And that just gets confusing.
So I don't expect people to keep up. And usually it doesn't change throughout the day too many times. But most of the time I'll just wake up one day and I'll be like, okay, well, today we're feeling masculine, so we're going to put our hair up. We're going to wear a hoodie. And then some days I'm like, oh, I'm a girl. I'm going to keep my hair down, maybe do some makeup, wear a dress, feel a little bit more feminine. But that's basically how it goes. It's just a day-to-day thing. And it used to be a lot more stressful than it is. But now I've just kind of accepted that that's who I am. And it is what it is kind of thing.
Sure. You know? Yeah. And when did that start? Like, when did this feeling of maybe a fluidity start, would you say?
My first conscious memory of this would probably be when I was 14, I'm going to say.
Okay.
And I basically told my foster mom at that time, and excuse me, sorry. They didn't understand. They were just like, okay, well, you're just a tomboy. Like, that's just how it is. You're a tomboy, and today you're just feeling like playing with bugs, and you're just feeling a little bit, you know, just confused kind of thing. But after that, I actually went to a pride parade, and I was talking to some people, and I was like, this is my first parade. I don't know what I am kind of thing. And I got to talking to a few people and they're like, maybe you're gender fluid. I'm like, I don't know what that is. So I went and researched it. And I was like, you know, that kind of really fits me. So that's just what I've been going by since that time.
Nice. That's pretty easy then. Easy going story. Yeah.
It's not, I've always been really surrounded by people that were extremely LGBTQ+ friendly. So me basically telling, like, I think I came out to my aunt as gender fluid last year. And I was just like, hey. And she's like, what's up? I'm like, by the way, I think I'm gender fluid. She's like, oh, okay, that's cool. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
So I'm extremely lucky that I have had family, and I know a lot of people aren't lucky enough, which is why I'm very openly LGBTQ plus friendly on online in general, because if like, that's why I love what you're doing too, because there's so many people that probably feel so alone, and it's very, very sad to me that your own parents could disown you for loving someone or liking something, and that just makes me really sad. So
yeah,
I like to be that person. If someone trusts me enough to tell me, hey, I'm trans, or hey, I'm gay, and I just want to be like, you know what, it's no big deal, cool. I want to make it seem like them coming out, yes, them coming out is a huge accomplishment and I'm very happy for them, but at the same time, I don't want to make it seem like, whoa, there was something, like, there's something wrong with that, or I want it just to seem like, hey, we're having tacos for lunch, and I'm like,
right.
Hey, we're having tacos, that's cool.
Exactly.
I feel like, you know, it's not that big of a deal that they're not the same as everyone else, and there's nothing wrong with that, because I'm really weird, so.
Totally, and it goes back to just breaking down this idea of normal. Well, normal doesn't exist, you know?
Normal doesn't exist.
It's no such thing as normal. And
normalcy is an illusion.
Yes,
created
absolutely.
Created by society to keep people in line, basically.
Mm-hmm. Totally, and I would even go as far as to say gender is an illusion as well.
100%. It's a social construct. It doesn't exist.
Social construct, it doesn't exist. It's just something that humans have created to put boxes and things and assign roles and stereotypes to. But at the end of the day, you're a bag of flesh with bones and skeletal muscle. And
100%, I agree.
Right? Yeah. So, well, that's pretty cool. That you're gender fluid and that you are, you know, aware of that and accepted of that. Is Canada in general, like, was your environment growing up, was it, you said it was pretty open to LGBT people. Is Canada as a whole more so, in your opinion, than America?
1,000% yes.
Okay.
Honestly, and I think it has a lot to do with how we're raised in general. Like, I don't know a lot about United States politics. I try to distance myself from Trump and everyone over there as much as I can, because I personally don't agree with a lot of the stuff that they do. So I like Canada. Like, I would never move from Canada. Yes, we have a lot of crappy things that happen here, but I feel 100% more safe. And just in general, Canadians, everyone knows them as the friendly people. And yes, we can be rude, but at the same time, we're hella accepting in general. I'm not saying that there are outliers, but in general, what we're taught in schools, I feel, is a little bit different than what people are taught in the United States. So we had openly gay people in our Christian school. Like, openly gay in a full-on Christian school. And no one cared. They're just like, oh, he's gay. Okay.
Yeah,
his name was Wolfgang. He was one of my best friends in high school, and he in a Christian school. That's
right.
Unheard of in the United States.
No, and what year was? I think we're the same age. So what year was this? You think, like, 2014, 2013?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna say around there. But yeah, okay. No.
Yeah.
Yes, there's bullying. Bullying exists. But at the same time, a lot of the teachers were taught differently. They were taught basically that it's okay. Like, basically, these are children and we're going to guide them the best that we can. We're not going to basically try to control their lives. And I know that some Christian schools were probably insane. Ours, basically, to give you retrospect, I was forced to take a parenting class. The males weren't, but I was.
Okay. Wow.
It's a little bit tricky, but honestly, I felt very safe and open with all of my teachers. And I'm pretty sure one of my teachers was gay, if I remember correctly, but I don't remember. I think he talked to us about it at one point. And it was really great, too. I'm just remembering this. He was actually one of the teachers that asked us, and before I even knew trans was a thing, he asked me, basically, or he asked the class, is there something you'd prefer to be called? And back then I was like, oh, cool, we get nicknames.
Right.
Because I didn't understand. But thinking back on that, I'm like, damn, that was a good-ass teacher. And we didn't even realize it. Like, we just thought it was fun. But
yeah,
it was very inclusive without outing people, basically. They're just like, hey, if you guys have something that you prefer to be called, a name that you prefer to be called, we'll call you that name. We'll mark it down on the list of the announcements, and we'll call you that. And I think that's beautiful, and I think that more schools should do that.
It totally is. It just makes it more inclusive and eases the anxiety of anyone who isn't comfortable with mm-hmm. their identity or sexuality. And it just mm-hmm. makes them feel more welcomed, which mm-hmm. honestly would probably produce a better student, you know, mm-hmm. if because and speaking from experience, you know, in times of anxiety or depression or you're struggling with internal anything, you know, you don't produce work or school as well as when you're happy. So
exactly.
And this is really, I'm really interested in this because we grew up in the same, I think we're the same age, same high school era. And I went to a private Christian school, but in the mm-hmm. States, oh. in California too.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And you're totally correct. It's like black and white. Mm-hmm. There was only one openly gay kid in my graduating class. Mm-hmm. He was bullied relentlessly. You know, like I was obviously closeted, mm-hmm. And didn't feel welcomed. We didn't have a gay teacher like you did. We actually in our seventh grade math teacher was one of those like suspicious things. She kind of had shorter hair, you know, like mm-hmm. lesbian hair, if mm-hmm. you want to call that. Again, we didn't stereotype, but just to set the scene for everyone listening.
Yeah,
and she had a female roommate. So it was one of those things where you don't really talk about it, but it's like, oh, mm-hmm. yeah, that's the math teacher with the roommate. Like, but it was never like discussed or opened about. Mm-hmm. But still, it's just, so you had this wonderful experience in high school in a Christian mm-hmm. school in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I'm mm-hmm. having this experience where I was closeted. I felt like I couldn't be myself. The school never taught about being gay. And if they did mm-hmm. in Bible class, we, you know, we read the verses that were against it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so if we're comparing America to Canada, Canada is seeming like the better option at this point.
Yeah, like I don't like to get too into politics and stuff. I just want to go out and say I support Green Party every freaking year.
Yeah,
I can't choose. But I think that our politics are extremely different, and the way that we're brought up is extremely different from the United States. You guys are more like in your face kind of thing. And Canadians mm-hmm. are just like, you know, we'll just see how it goes, you know?
Yeah.
So no one really, and I'm not saying that Canada is perfect, or Canada doesn't have homophobia, or Canada doesn't have racism, because it exists everywhere, and there's no mm-hmm. way we're going to get rid of it, unfortunately, at least in this lifetime. But from what I hear about the United States, their schooling systems in general is a lot worse than in Canada. I have a friend who has dual citizenship who had went to school there for 7 years, came back here and went to school here. And she says, it is different. Like, I don't fear going to school here. Whereas I'm scared that I'm number one going to, because she's lesbian. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I'm worried I'm going to be bullied. I was worried I was going to be bullied there. But I came to Canada, and literally my best friend, first thing that she said, she's like, I'm gay. I'm like, oh. and that's the thing. And like, it's just, I'd like it to be casual. I'd like people to be able to basically just be like, hey, I'm gay. And I'm like, okay, that's
yeah.
Cool. I'm gender fluid. Nice to meet you.
Like, right?
I'd like it to be open like that, like something that you just talk about. And I really wish that the United States would get a little bit better at that, because I cry when I see some of the stuff that happens over there, because I've never had to experience it, and it's so different culturally, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is. And it's probably not going to get better under the current administration.
No. No. Definitely
but
is not.
What does Canada think of guns?
I'm okay, so cool thing about that, we had the first mass shooting since, I believe it was 1917, a few weeks ago or so. And immediately our government banned assault rifles, like specific guns that immediately, it was 2 weeks. It was literally 2 weeks after it happened. And our government was like, we don't want our kids to be afraid. Here you go. We're taking away these guns. Now it's very hard to get a gun in Canada in general. We have extremely strict gun laws. You can get a gun. Make no mistake. We have guns upstairs. They're hunting rifles, though. We aren't allowed, unless you're a law enforcement, you're not allowed to have pistols. You're not allowed to have semi-automatics. You're not, but it's even stricter now that it happened. We've had a total, I believe, don't quote me on this, but in the hundreds of deaths since like 1917.
Wow.
Like only hundreds. Now, if you take that to the United States, where you guys literally have mass shootings weekly.
Right.
We've had like maybe 600
deaths. On your head.
We've had maybe 600 deaths from mass shootings since like the 1900s. That's it.
That's all
we've had.
Wow. I'm speechless because like, it's such a big thing, and there's this like rhetoric that seems to be drilled into these people in the United States that it's a right, a God-given right to own a gun. And it's like, well, okay, look, you have a gun. Like you just said, you have guns upstairs. Why does it have to be these guns that are literally lives of school
Because children? We want to protect everyone. We want to protect everyone. Where are you going? Okay, she's there now. I hear you. basically, I feel like, I don't know why America's so gun crazy. Like, I don't understand. I would rather feel safe. Like, I go to school. I don't worry about being shot. When I hear something like, oh, bang, 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 that's fireworks to me. Like, I'm like, oh, that's just fireworks. It doesn't even cross my mind that could be a gun going off. And I feel like when I go to the States, I feel like, as a Canadian, because I'm not around that, I see someone with a gun, I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like, oh, no, like, I don't want that. I don't want it. And right. I know a lot of Canadians feel differently. Like my uncle in general is a huge gun supporter, and he allies himself with Trump sometimes, depending on, and I'm like, gross. But but at the same time, I'm like, why do we need them? Like, I understand if you want to protect yourself, okay, but why do you need a gun that can decimate 300 people in one, like, why do you need that? I don't understand. Just, as a Canadian, I can't comprehend it personally.
It's ridiculous. I understand the argument of having one for protection of your home and everything, and I support that, or for hunting, but just a gun that is meant to kill people and multiple people in a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to have that. And if your argument is to protect from the government or a corrupt government or a foreign invasion, like, you can't go against their tanks.
Good luck going against the military. Okay.
I mean,
if you have that sort of confidence, then I applaud you. we have hunting rifles upstairs, and they're locked in a safe. The ammunition is separate. In Canada, you're not allowed to have a loaded weapon in the house. The ammunition and the gun have to be in separate locations or within the same location, locked away, like separately kind of thing, which I think is really good. It prevents a lot of kids from getting them. But a lot of people make the argument that basically the police can't protect you. What happens if the robber has the gun? But the robbers here, they don't have guns.
Right.
Like, they do, but no one uses guns for home invasions. It's just not something that happens usually. I mean, I'm sure it's occurred, but it's not something that is an active worry here in Canada, because it's so hard to get a gun in general. Like, you have to go through licensing, and then you have to be approved. And I know the States has sort of the same thing, but we can't buy guns at Walmart. Like, we can't go to Walmart and be like, I want a gun. And they're like, okay, here you go. We have to go through so many hoops to be able to, and then you have to take a course, and then you have to make sure that you're mentally sound. And then it's a big thing, and it's worked. And it's shown that in certain places, these things work. In Japan, they work. Yes, crime happens. In Canada, yes, crime happens, but it works. It's shown to have worked, you know?
Totally. Well, this has been the last 10 minutes or so has been a PSA for Canada. So I think Trudeau might have to cut me a check for everyone that will be moving to Canada now.
Yes.
Well, do you have any advice or just anything you would like to share to anyone that, that might be struggling with something that you've struggled with in the past, whether it is related to being gender fluid or not? Is there any just advice that you would want to tell someone?
I would say that no matter what happens to you or what bad things happen, there's always something that's going to go right for you. The only person that you yourself have to accept, or the only person that really matters, their opinion that matters, it's you. You're the only one, because in 10 to 15 years, no one's going to remember you. The people that you went to high school, they aren't going to know who the heck you are. The people that you once called friends, eventually certain ones will leave, and nothing really matters. Live for the moment, and you'll be much happier if you just accept your own I'm getting emotional.
No, you're good.
If you only accept your personal views of yourself and not listen to anyone else, then you're mm-hmm. gonna be so much happier. Just keep climbing. Eventually you'll reach the top, and the view is hella good.
I love that. Yeah, live your truth. Accept your truth and live it. Yeah. And own it. Do you want to shout out your socials? Where can people find you?
Sure. So you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at BirdTales, B-I-R.
Thank you all so much for listening. You are all so beautiful and amazing. Make sure to check us out at www.thealphabetmafia.com. You can read our blogs there. You can support our brand. Get a sticker. Get yourself a sticker. That really helps us. It raises brand awareness. You put it on your water bottle. You put it on your laptop. It becomes more of a common thing seen around town. If you want to be featured on our YouTube show where I answer your DMs and emails regarding, you know, your situation you're in or needing advice, you can email us at info@thealphabetmafia.com. Again, that's info@thealphabetmafia.com. Just put in the headline LGBTQ plus advice, something like that, and I will try and read it and then use it on the show. Of course, if you need serious help, you can visit the trevorproject.org, or you can give them a call at 1-866-488-7386. If you are in need of serious help, please reach out to those people immediately. They will be more than happy to help in a tremendous way. Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you have a beautiful morning, evening, whatever it is. Good night.